306 DGS on KMOX. I mean, talk about something here is kind of difficult to talk about. So we're downtown. I've been downtown since 1990 when I came out of law school. I've been here in one way or another since. So I feel like a downtowner. I feel like I have my my resume is pretty complete and can talk with some experience and authority on it. And we'll talk about how, since COVID especially, but probably the last 10 years or so, downtown has been just sort of a wasteland, no pun for that last song, that there are more homeless people, and this is a real thing, more homeless people than there are business people downtown on most days, at least where we are at 12th and Olive. Rach and I take our little walk each day before the show, and today we had to avoid people about five times because we were going to get asked for money or worse. And then we walked by a bus stop, and there's this big giant vent, which is the size of like a small pool. And there were about 10 people waiting for the bus, and all but a couple of them were just laying there, sort of asleep. And we walked past them. You kind of hold your breath. You walk past them. And then they all popped up, and about half of them were asking us for money. Okay. And then we had this story that at 12th and Olive, which is exactly where we are, just this morning.
Right outside our building.
Outside our building, a guy was dragging a baby. Dragging a newborn baby down the road.
In a stroller. Yeah,
in
yeah.
a stroller.
But upside down.
Upside down and throwing up on himself. So I have decided over the years to take a very accepting and generous approach to homeless people and give them money. One of the big reasons is that my brother was homeless for about 6 months when he lived in Tucson, about a year before he passed away. And we didn't know that until after he passed away. And I always see people who are struggling, and I think that's someone's brother, it's someone's son. What have you.
And it is.
And I would, even if I give them $20 and they spend it on drugs or alcohol, I've always had the thought, well, I'd rather give them the money than not. But at some point, when you think about their background and what got them there and the inequities in life and so forth and so on, but at what point and to what degree do you point the finger at the person and say, what are you doing to get yourself out of this situation? What are you doing to help yourself? What are you doing to not be the person lying on this grate and popping up and asking for money when people walk by? Thoughts?
I think it's a common question. The problem is in so many of these cases, addiction is such a huge part of the problem. And that's something that's very, very difficult to sort out. And unless someone has really reached that point where they are ready to change. Even sometimes when they do reach that point and they're ready to change, it's so difficult to get out of the throes of addiction that, you know, it's sometimes still doesn't happen. So I always still try to lean on the side of feeling compassion for the situation, because not only are they dealing with that, the addiction, they don't have a home to go home to at the end of the day. I mean, it's just all compounding and becoming more and more of a hopeless feeling situation for the person. I don't know, Wheels, what do you think?
It's hard because it has to be a bit of both, right? I mean, we're all responsible to a degree for ourselves. And if you're not looking out for yourself and you don't have anybody else, then you're stuck. But sometimes you can't initially, right? That's to me, this is where a function of government comes in, to help people that in the moment cannot help themselves. You can't help them forever. That's not practical. That's not realistic. But you can, but getting that started and maybe getting someone on the right track where you can get them detoxed, where you can get them treatment. The problem is people sometimes just don't want it. So they'll get picked up. You get put someplace and they just leave. And I know that you know, there's a difficult balance there. But I saw an economist make this point not too long ago, that we could, if we wanted to, put a significant chunk, if not outright eliminate, things like poverty and homelessness. Not to get rid of them entirely. There's no such thing, right? There's always going to be something. But we can really knock it down. And it would cost about 1% of our GDP per year to do it. So 1%. We're not willing to commit 1% of what our country generates every year. We're not willing because we aren't doing it, right? We could have it set up. And the way that the economist put it was, we could make it so there are no homeless veterans. We could make it so that kids are not hungry. We could do it for 1%. And the problem is that obviously you cannot prevent what's going to happen in the future. You can't prevent someone having a relapse after getting treatment and ending up back where they were. You can't prevent the person that has so many issues at the moment that they're not even going to listen to you if you try to put them in counseling or if you try to make them detox or whatever. But there are a lot of people that are reachable that could be helped with those added resources. And again, 1% of the GDP of the United States. And we as a nation have decided we don't care enough to do that because it would come at the expense of something else. Now, it would take a grand effort and it would not, there's no cure, right? It's like battling cancer. You're not going to cure it. We're not going to cure mental illness, are we?
No.
You treat it and you try to bring the effects down. You try to make it so that at least some people recover and others maybe it's better than it was and others are still going to be in that terrible place. But it shouldn't be in the numbers that we look at on a day-to-day basis in a nation with the wealth that we have. There's no reason why that should happen.
I've never been in that position, but I'm trying to put myself in that position. And it would be difficult because I think a lot of the people down here seem to have found a way to either through asking for money or petty crime, get enough money to stay high all day and feel pretty good being out of it, laying on a grate, waiting for a bus. Better than dealing with the reality of their situation. And they're not looking at, if I get myself clean, I could be an executive,
right,
and move to Chesterfield.
Right.
At best, they could get a job at KFC for $12 an hour and not be high all day, which probably doesn't sound like a better alternative, you know?
It might not be to that mindset, right? And I think, you know, when it comes to what we see every day, and by the way, not just what we see, but what tourists see when people are coming. There's a convention at the convention center going on right now. What do the people from out of town see? What do people who come downtown for Cardinals games see or Blues games see? There's two parts to this problem. There is the human part that we're talking about, and then there is the how do you grow your city part, which is separate, but they're obviously connected, but they're separate issues to solve. I think we all would agree that the reason the people congregate where they do is one of two reasons, right? It's either where the help is, right down the street, St. Patrick Center, or you go the other direction a couple blocks, and what's that direction? That's where the drugs are. Well, we want the people that are going to be going to the St. Patrick Center, right? We want the help. But it's not an easy thing, but the way to change what this downtown area looks like is maybe, I don't know, not have drug dealers across the street from City Hall. Out in the open, broad daylight every day, 365 days a year. And
Why do you think they don't crack down on it?
It probably just seems too difficult. Or it seems inhumane. I mean, it can't be that hard to see it.
Well, I mean, I literally saw someone dealing drugs.
I see it every day. Yeah.
So
you see the little handshake and you see something passing from one hand to another. I see it all the time when I'm driving by the parks that are all littered downtown.
Let's talk to Bill. Bill's son is addicted and homeless, and he knows a bit about their choices. Bill, thank you so much for calling in. Go ahead.
Like I said, I have a 33-year-old son who is homeless. He spends his time in South St. Louis and downtown, and he's addicted to cocaine. I had lunch with him last week. Was a very sad thing, but I got food in him. But he's not ready to join the real world. He doesn't seem to this is a relapse for him. He he had an addiction. He went to jail. He got himself straight. He actually had a nice job paying $85,000 a year, had his own apartment, had a girlfriend, and where they were talking marriage, and now he's back where he's at. And it is all just a choice. Like I said, it doesn't make any sense to me, and I talk to him about it regularly, that he doesn't want more. He's capable of more, and we've offered help. We will pay for rehab. We told him that we have programs that he can go into. He just chooses to do it his own way. Now, he's very, very stubborn, and for him, it has always been about doing it his way. And sometimes I think the more we talk to him, the more stubborn he gets.
You know, I have a tendency to fold in on myself and feel sorry for myself on things. Bill, as a parent of two kids, this must be incredibly hard for you.
Yes, it is, especially since we lost his older brother to an overdose 6 years ago. So not when we don't hear from him, obviously the worst starts creeping into my head about, you know, where is he and how is he? But when I do see him and I'm in contact with him, it is very frustrating because he doesn't accept help.
Yeah. Thank you, Bill. I appreciate it.
And that's kind of what we were, you know, when we're talking at the beginning, right, is...
I'm so glad Bill called.
Yeah, to hear
because
it.
Because I was having one of those days... which I do about once a month, where I'm like, what? Come on.
Yeah.
Come on. Can I just take a walk without someone asking me for money? And then you talk to Bill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's a natural reaction, though, Dave, the first one you're talking about. I guarantee you, the majority of people coming down for a ball game or going to a show or whatever, that's your feeling. And then when you think more deeply about it, or you hear that story, or you know your brother's story, You start to think more about how there's a that it gets you in, to me, it gets me into a loop of how do you fix it, and it is all it comes down to mental illness. It's not somebody wants to be there. It's that an addiction, but what feeds addiction? Things like depression and anxiety feed addiction, you know. And the difference between a lot of the people out there and us or the people in our lives is very slim.
Yeah. That's the thing we need to keep in mind, is because people think like, oh, you know, if you don't think about it with any compassion, it's just like they want to be out there. They're making the wrong choice. You have no idea how close you are to being in that situation. I mean, we're all closer to it than we think we are.
Yeah, I have self-medicated my whole life in many ways. I've never taken a hard drug.
Right.
And so who knows?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? Because if you're feeling the same... If it starts off simple, the choice to go that route even one time can set you down a path where you're not going to be, where the recovery process is complicated. It's complicated with alcohol, though, right? I mean, we see how many lives have been changed and ruined and how many people have gone through alcohol recovery programs over the years. It's similar, but it doesn't have the same impact as heroin and some of those harder drugs that we're talking about.
Show's moving along. Dave Murray at the bottom of the hour. Lieutenant Colonel Lucas Kuntz will be in studio here at KMOX at 4 p.m. Get to know him a little bit. Race, what's the thing that you think is cute but some people don't?
Oh, so this is a trend going on in high schools right now. High school seniors in particular are picking up like little kid backpacks because, you know, you can get them in bright colors and you can get like a Moana backpack or a Lion King backpack or something. And they're doing this as a way to just kind of like... I don't know, just have fun and express themselves. And it's a little silly, but I actually think it's adorable. I think they all look really cute with their Aladdin backpacks and such.
You know, my long history of trying to impress people with things that won't impress them.
Yes.
When I was way too old, like in my 20s, I thought I'd be the guy that would bring like a Star Trek lunchbox to work.
Oh.
Didn't work out.
I did that too. In high school, in the early 2000s, like the metal lunchboxes kind of came back and I had a Batman one. I think it was Batman Begins. And I was like, okay. Oh, here's my cool Batman lunchbox. Oh, yeah.
Look how ironic I am.
Yeah, exactly. It was very silly.
Man, lunchboxes were life.
Oh, they were a big deal.
Back when you were a kid.
And I honestly can't remember what any one of them that I had.
I had a $6 million man. Remember that?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I had a soft one. It was like one of the squishy ones, and it was shaped like a fish, and you'd open the mouth, and that was where the food went. Man, that was my best friend.
That's cute.
I will say, I think for most of my school, we did the brown bag thing.
Yeah, I like the brown bag as well.
I don't know why, because it can't be more efficient.
Yeah.
It is pretty nice, though, just being able to throw it away after lunch is done. You don't have to lug around the lunch bag.
I bet that's it, because you know what, as kids, we'd lose them.
It was mean streets for me. I didn't like the bought food, so I took my lunch a lot.
Right,
but I took two things, tuna fish or Braunschweiger.
Okay.
You're a hit with the ladies, I'm sure.
Best breath in school.
Yeah. tough to get any game going.
Could have used some smart mouth back then.
Hey, guys.
People just be like, what is that? Braunschweiger.
You want some?
Split it with you. For DGS on Camo X. Going to be talking to Lieutenant Colonel Lucas Kuntz, who is trying to take Josh Hawley's seat. He'll be live in studio at 4 p.m. Right now we talk to Dave Murray. Hello, Dave.
Hi there.
So y'all good now with your back?
Yeah, everything's pretty good.
Good. Good to hear. You guys had a rough patch, man.
Well, you know, getting old is you know what.
Amen.
Welcome to 60, by the way.
Yeah, man. No, you're right. It's just like, no matter how good you look, no matter how, I can't believe you're 60, I can't believe you're 71. The internals sometimes don't agree.
Oh, I know. I'm not 71 yet, by the way.
Oh, I know. I was talking about Mark Close.
Almost, but not quite.
So we got a little heat up. How long is it going to last?
About two and a half days. That's probably about it. It's nothing weird. It's nothing out of the ordinary. We do have a couple of interesting things coming up. And before I get to the forecast, we're going to see some haze build up in the sky. And that's from the Western wildfires, not only in the U.S., but also in Canada. Some of that's going to start to filter over the middle of the country. I don't think it's a major effect for us, but if you notice some hazy skies, especially at sunrise and sunset now 7:17 as the days get shorter, that's what it's coming from. Also, we now have a new name storm in the western Gulf of Mexico. We were talking about that last week. It's Francine. It's got a name this morning. And it looks like landfall probably between Lake Charles and New Orleans on the Louisiana coast in a couple of days. Should be a hurricane. It's not moving very quickly. But what's interesting about that is anytime there's a storm in the western Gulf of Mexico, we really have to pay attention to it because every once in a while, one of those gets some moisture up and over us. And it does look like, even though it's a long way off, some unsettled skies towards the end of the week, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and hopefully we'll squeeze some rain out of it. Right now, it's mainly St. Louis south and east. Could even be some gusty winds from the thing. It's a long, long way off, but there are at least some encouraging signs. And when we're in a serious drought like we are now, it's kind of nice to be looking forward to that. Near term, delightful this evening, delightful overnight, nice tomorrow morning, but warm it up to 88 degrees tomorrow afternoon, 62 on Tuesday night. Wednesday still looking like the hottest day of the week. Sunny but hazy skies, 92 degrees. Thursday partly sunny, about 86. And then let's just call it unsettled for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And we'll start to home in on that. But right now, with the scenario that I'm looking at, we could be looking at a high of 74, 75 degrees on Friday.
Oh, cool. Nice. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it once it, you're never more than a couple days away from the 70s, I can deal with that. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Race, before we do headlines, you are heading to Japan.
Uh-huh.
Wednesday, mm-hmm. for your third time.
Mm-hmm.
Now that you've been there...
How much you paying, Rach?
Well...
Now that
Next
you
question.
Have been there,
well done, Rach.
What are you most looking forward to? Like, when I go to Colorado, I have my little things. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you like? I can't wait until I'm in this situation.
I can't wait to just walk around and experience Tokyo. The thing I'm probably most looking forward to is going back to a sumo tournament because we had such a good time last time and we've been kind of following the wrestlers since then. Like last time we went, like, oh, this will be fun. And then we got into it and followed all of their tournaments since then and are now
it's
going
easy
back.
To get hooked into, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really fun. I mean,
we watched it for a couple of days together.
Yeah, because it was on in the office and you were getting into it. Yeah, it's fun.
I like how they hand them their money.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You win and they hand you a stack of cash. And then they hand it off to their handlers. It's very cool.
But, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably what I'm looking forward to the most is going back to this tournament.
What aspect do you dread the most?
The flight. But I'm trying to go into it with a good mindset. And, you know, it's a privilege to be able to fly across the ocean. So yes. Even though it's going to be a pain and it's going to be long and it's going to be stressful and, you know, maybe I won't sleep, it's very cool that I get to do that. So I'm just trying to stay in that headspace the whole time. So, yeah.
How do you go? What's the flight pattern?
We go over Alaska. So we fly to Dallas.
To Dallas?
Mm-hmm.
And then Dallas straight?
Yeah, Dallas to Haneda Airport in Tokyo.
Oh,
so.
Wow. That's a flight.
Yeah, it's about 12 hours and 40 minutes.
Yeah.
I remember when I lived in Alaska, we would go through Seattle. Mm-hmm. And it was about, I'll get this wrong, I think it was about 8 hours, something like that. I mean, it's a long damn time on a plane. Dave, what's your longest flight?
To Hawaii, St. Louis to Hawaii. And again, you usually go to Dallas or Chicago. 8 hours, probably 8, maybe 9.
How do you do?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I have the ability. Janice is just could hit me with a hammer. I can fall asleep before we take off.
Oh man.
And I can stay asleep.
Yeah, that's not fair. That's not fair.
Phoebe does that. Phoebe, like, we'll drive 13 hours to Colorado, and for her, it's like going to QT. Like, she is asleep the whole time unless we stop to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, Kurt calls it the time machine because he's like that, too.
He does fall asleep, and
then he wakes up, and he's there. He's like, oh, it's very frustrating.
Bad? What I would give.
Yeah, that's nice.
If I could combine Wheeler and Dave Murray. when you want, no worries.
I don't think that's mathematically possible.
I can try.
Too much awesome for one person.
Yeah.
Well, AI might be able to do that.
Yeah, there you go, Dave.
A meteorologist who loves wolves.
The master of wolves.
Want to do some headlines?
Sure. Headlines is brought to you by Schnucks. Reward yourself daily with the Schnucks Rewards app. Okay, so the U.S. Surgeon General just released a new report called Parents Under Pressure. And they report that 41% of parents and caregivers say they are so stressed they cannot function most days. And nearly 50% said their stress completely overwhelms them. This is because they're working longer hours. Childcare costs have went through the roof. Saving for college tuition can feel hopeless given rising college costs. There's a youth mental health crisis, school shootings, the harms and risks of social media and technology, and all of this goes through the filter of perceived parenting standards that we see on social media. Like we were talking about earlier, people can portray things in a certain way that make you feel less about yourself. So parents these days are feeling incredibly stressed, according to the U.S. Surgeon General. Yeah.
I wonder if, because parents have always had, pardon me, stress, I wonder if their experience of it in their body is substantially different than past generations, or if they just didn't talk about it.
Yeah, I always think it's fascinating because you do have the comparisons that Rach is talking about, right? So you think you should be this and you're not, so that adds to the other natural stresses. But think about how stressful it must have been to be a parent 150 years ago or 200 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, you have no idea if your kid's going to live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's all. I mean, like just day to day, you know, there are dangers out there. The world was just a more dangerous place. That is a different kind of stress than something that's in your face every day. But I don't know physiologically if the feeling is different because you came up with it when they were back in those days in the settlers' days.
We may have really hit maybe not the pinnacle, but a pinnacle for human life. In the late 90s, before 9/11, before social media, before 24-hour news cycle, before idiots in politics, or at least to this level, we had medicines, we had technology, we were living our lives.
Cold War was over.
We weren't up each other's butts about everything. The Cold War was over. 90s might have been it.
It's pretty good in my mind.
Rach was a little kid.
So I mentioned school shootings in that last story. So this latest shooting at Appalachee High, did you guys know that the security system had only been in place for about a week? Every teacher and staff member was issued an identification badge, and there was a panic button on it. You push the button three times for everyday emergencies and push it over and over again if there's a campus-wide threat. And that's what they did. Staff in the building kept pushing their buttons, alerting law enforcement officers almost immediately about the active shooter, and that helped save lives.
I watched a special over the weekend about student resource officers, and they are police officers who are in schools. And the package that I saw on television, they choose these people very carefully because they are also like hug givers.
Mm.
They are mentors to the kids. They're not just the scary person with a gun in the corner in the flak jacket.
And yeah, I saw that. I saw that report too. That was fascinating to me.
Yeah,
because I didn't know that was going on at all.
I did not either, and it just makes all the sense in the world. I mean, I'm sure it's the allocation of resources, and maybe some people don't want cops giving their kids hugs in the schools, but boy, it made a lot of sense to me, Dave.
Oh yeah, me too. They had holsters and they were looked like they had bulletproof vests on and the whole shebang, but the kids seemed to love them.
Yeah.
There's a government shutdown threat looming over us. Lawmakers returned to Capitol Hill today after a lengthy August recess to kick off a government funding fight with just 3 weeks to avert a shutdown. Congress has until October 1st to fund the government, and lawmakers will also almost certainly need to pass a stopgap measure to keep the government going and funded.
It's one of the worst things about politics, because you know most of them are thinking, I know what we should do, but the election's 1 month after this. How can we use this against our opponents?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. I mean, that could be ugly. That could get really ugly.
I know the problem is that the people that would need to institute the rules are the ones that would have to push it forward. But I would argue that not a single person in the federal, not an elected official in the federal government should receive a dime or any medical coverage or anything if they allow the government to shut down.
Amen.
They should get nothing because they're not doing their job. Their job is literally to keep things going. And stopping it for political reasons or pushing it to the brink every time for political reasons should come at a cost direct to you as a human being.
Guys, I have really good news. Elon Musk is on track to become the world's first trillionaire.
Yes.
I know that's the news you're all looking for today. According to a new report from Informa Connect Academy, if Musk's wealth continues to grow at an annual rate of 110%, the report predicts he will be the first person to achieve trillionaire status by 2027.
Dave, I'm getting about 110% these days. How about you?
That's the. If I can get over 101%, I'm kind of happy.
Yeah, sure. You can take that.
He's going to end up being a Bond villain, isn't he?
I mean, he's just one costume away right now.
And one more story here. George W. Bush will not endorse either candidate this election, and neither will former First Lady Laura Bush. They do not plan on sharing who they will be casting their ballots for, noting President Bush retired from presidential politics years ago.
Yeah. I'm not sure how I feel about that. I get it. I mean, it's typically what the past presidents have done. They keep their mouths shut. They support each other quietly, but kind of unprecedented times.
But they always support their own party's candidate.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious when you don't.
Right. I think that isn't, I mean, not that I need to defend W, but I mean, not openly endorsing your party's candidate is
kind of says it all.
Pretty much saying it without saying it, right?
Yep, I think so. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
You got it.
Normally, I wouldn't think that anybody had a chance against Josh Hawley. It's Missouri. He's a Republican. He's kind of a rising star in MAGA. But the polls are pretty close with Lieutenant Colonel Lucas Kuntz. Lucas is on his way right now. Maybe a couple minutes late. There's an accident out there, but he'll be on somewhere between 4 and 4:15. We promise you that. Get to know him a little bit better as a person. I like doing stuff like this.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Quick break. Right back. Don't go away.